In this workshop on developing vision trips, the approach we're going to take on it, each of us will share for a few minutes from our perspective. It's an interesting thing. Each of the three of us have had some influence from the way that Hope Baptist Church has gone about doing vision trips, but then we've also done them individual of that. So we'll have some similar perspectives. You'll hear some things mentioned several times. Those are the things you'll want to highlight, because they must be good if we all are doing them. Some things will be different. Either that or
we're... Either that or I can't think of anything else.
We're fooling ourselves. Each of us will share for a little bit, and then we'll have some time for questions. In your handouts, George and I had a handout in there, and I think Brad's going to give you one in a minute. Mine's kind of a, I believe we call that shrimp colored now or something like that. Whatever. So you can get those ready. George, will you go first and then Brad, and then I'll do the wrap up.
If you'll pick out the yellow colored canary colored handout, and then the white one, both of them say vision trip or vision trips on the top. That's what I'll be working from. I just thought of a creative way to summarize what I wanted to say in the format of who, what, when, where, why, and how. And so that's on your canary-colored handout. And as far as who that we look for is the type of student is a mature graduating senior or a graduate. That's who we try to target. And as far as what, it's a vision trip. It's really not a mission trip. We don't go build people's auditoriums and things like that, although we do some missions things on there. It's an eye-opening, challenging exposure to a valuable experience. And as far as when, the times are mainly right after school or maybe during spring break or over Christmas. And I've listed about six places that, there's more than this, but these are six places that would be good. We have taken some to Fort Worth and the Hope Baptist Church, and I've listed John Hawkins and Harold Bullock's name. And Lincoln, Nebraska, we've taken a vision trip there with Brett Yon and John Harrington is there. And Los Angeles, we've taken a vision trip there, and Church on Brady with Tom Wolf, or Irvine with Seth Gatchell, and Brad Sprague, who's the BSU director there at Irvine, or Ralph Neighbor at Chino, or at Saddleback with Rick Warren, and there's numerous others that are there in the LA area, and I didn't have room to list them all. And another one that I'd thought about taking was in Wichita, Kansas, and two contact people you'll have there is Terry Williams or Jim Presnell, and if you'd like phone numbers on those guys, I'd be more than glad to give them to you. Some ideas I've had running around in my head for about the past year and a half is maybe taking one to San Francisco. And contact people there would be Mike Thompson or Dr. Francis DeBose. And I also talked to John Wooster after I got this printed up, and he'd be another good contact person for the San Francisco area. And then another one, this is in the works, so this number six on your handout really couldn't happen yet, but in Virginia, D.C. area, would be Dennis Blackwood, Rusty Corm, or Steve Cochran. And there's numerous other ones, but those are six of them that at least you can start and have some idea. And then why is to give students a vision for a world without Christ. And let me stop there. In Isaiah 49:6, let me read that for you. It says... He says, it is too small a thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to restore the preserved ones of Israel. I will also make you a light to the nations so that my salvation may reach to the end of the earth. And Isaiah is saying here, it's okay to stay around with the believers and just train them up. That's okay to do. But really, it's too small a thing just to stick around and do that. You need to project your vision to the ends of the earth. And you need to see that your vision goes outside the boundaries of your campus. And so I'm the application I see for that for us is that these vision trips help students expand their mindset past the campus. And so that's what we're trying to accomplish with these. That's the why. In the second portion of this statement here I wrote, and to help them make the transition from making disciples on the university campus to making disciples in the community and in the church. I think it's crucial that you get a vision for your students' lives individually, not just for the 4, 5, 6, 7 years, however long that they're there at your campus, but that you get a vision for them for the rest of their life. And you want to plant them somewhere or allow them opportunities, some places to go where they can continue to grow with Christ. And that's what these vision trips do, is their exposure to places where students can go plug in and continue to grow. And these 6 places I've listed here are just examples of that, that maybe they could grow in the future. Now, as far as how, I just threw that in there just because it helped the flow of the who, what, when, where, how. And, you know, to take a bus, a van, airlines. And now let's skip on over to your white page that says a vision trip on the top. Now, what this is the actual agenda that we had for our Los Angeles vision trip just a couple of weeks ago. This last year we took a 10-day trip, as you'll be able to see. And these are just, and you're welcome to take this and adapt it on any of your vision trips. But these are some objectives that we have in the Los Angeles vision trip. Number one, to expand our idea of what the world is like, how people need Jesus, and to be a witness in that context. To expose them to a multicultural environment, to expose them to a church that is having an impact on this environment, to challenge from the pastor, Tom Wolf, to help them rethink their strategy about life. And then we discuss things about different worldviews with students. And there's a discussion with various campus ministers. Like in this situation, it was Brad, and then Neil Walker came over, and we discussed things with them. To talk with college students from Oklahoma who have moved to Los Angeles and are now ministering as lay men and women. And number two is to serve and encourage the Christians who are working in the area. To allow the opportunity for our students to reevaluate their convictions and goals. And number four, that the students consider where to locate after graduation, not only on the basis of a job, money, and convenience, but where they will receive and give help for reaching the world for Christ. And to carry what they've learned from this experience back to their campuses. Let me just insert here one story that one of our students this last year and going to L.A., we went around, we helped Church on Brady start some new churches, and it wasn't the traditional way of starting new churches where you went door to door and knocked on doors. What they did the first day is they just went around and just prayed for the neighborhood. And that student said, I can take that back to my campus. I can walk around and pray for my dorm room. And so that was something that he could take back. And for me, the whole trip's worth it, just if that was all that he learned. Just to take back something that he could learn to do. Let me skip down here to some key qualities to be an effective person on reaching a city like Los Angeles. Death to self, being a self-starter, and you can read the rest of those at your own leisure. Some suggestions that we would suggest on this mission trip, and if you take one or vision trip, that you allow some time that they can think through some things. What did they hear today? What did they see today? What did they learn? And we say in here that they should be plan to be troubled after they've seen Los Angeles, because we've talked to students and it does trouble them. Some particulars, and I think it's on the next page there, to be prepared to be a servant, be teachable, be prepared to take the worst seat. And these are just some things we picked up for the host family, since they provide the lodging for us in Los Angeles. To give them little thank you notes, to take small gifts, to keep their clothes neat and tidy and put away, and suitcase clothes and cleaned up. Those are just some things that you might think through on your trips if you're staying with families. Now, I've listed here the actual schedule that we went through, and I won't read it all, but you can look through, and you can just use this and just adapt it. If you want to do a vision trip, these are some things you might think: to get a speaker to come in, and then to take a tour of the area. On Tuesday, we'd take a tour. We'd go to the Mormon Temple, the Hare Krishna Temple, and many other places, Chinatown. On Wednesday, we went into Irvine, where we had different speakers, and you can see there. And we had a Wednesday afternoon, we played on the beach some, and so you can kind of see there some of the things that we did. On Tuesday, we did some apologetics, and then we went and hit the campus. We learned about the apologetics and the surveys, and then we hit the campus right after that. So we tried to make application to what we were learning. On Friday, we went to the U.S. Center for World Missions, which personally, I'm reevaluating whether or not we ought to do that because there's some changes going on that campus. And I'm not saying that it's necessarily bad to do, but I'm reevaluating whether or not next year or the year after we ought to go to the U.S. Center. The Buddhist temple, we went to that. And see, each of these times we went to one of these cults or world religions, we tried to give the students literature. This is what they believe. And we tried to talk through after we went through it and evaluated and debriefed. And so we evaluated all the times we were in the vans. We put over 1,000 miles on our vans those 10-day trip. And so it's a good time in the vans. You can use the time traveling. Saturday, but roughly Saturday, Monday, and Tuesday, we allowed for some survey work with Church on Brady. And we also went to Rick Warren's church, Saddleback Community Church, on Saturday. Sunday, we allowed for just time at Church on Brady for their worship service and share groups. Skip on over here to your last page, and I'll sum up here. The type of student, as I've listed, that we look for is an upperclassman, a mature student. In times past, we've taken even top-notch freshmen, and that they really weren't ready for something like this. So if you take a trip like this LA trip, I would encourage you to look at upperclassmen. The cost of our trip this year was $350. We went for 10 days, which was a good time. Last year we went for 7. That was good. So 7 to 10 days is a good time. We flew out and rented vans upon arrival. And then I've kind of summarized it in a paragraph there, which you can read. But let me just close with this, that we look at this as a training program. This is not a vacation for them, and we tell them that. And by training, I mean that I think that I have, as the director of this training program, the authority to deal with students' attitudes, to deal with students' character and their values. And like Harold said last night, that trips are a good way that you can deal with people's values. Well, we use trips like this to deal with someone's eating habits, so to speak. If you're around them for, you know, 3 meals a day for 10 days, you kind of pick up on if they need to know what to do or what not to do. We deal with people's attitudes on if they want to sit by the window in the front all the time. And we deal with people if they're not being a servant. You pick up on some of those if you're around them for 10 days, rather than if you just meet with them once a week in your office in almost a sterile environment. So we see this trip as a training environment. And I think that it's my responsibility as the director to approach them on the things that I think that they need to be approached on.
Brad Sprague.
Well, this is the second workshop that I've been involved in, and I've been in the middle both times, and that's because I think I'm the bologna between the two pieces of bread. But anyway, I tell you, I really appreciate the thoroughness of both these guys. And, you know, there's a verse that just came to mind as I was sitting here. It says, "The wisdom of the prudent is to give thought to their ways, but the folly of fools is deception." And planning and preparation for these vision trips is so important. And I tell you, the kind of material that you're getting can really make a difference about the quality of the trip. Well, what I want to focus in is on the qualities that will be stretched on the trip. I remember one of my first vision trip that I ever took, and it was with Harold Bullock and Seth Gatchel and a couple other people in a 66 Buick Skylark, and we drove from Fort Worth to Los Angeles. It was the first vision trip that Harold, at least being part of that gang. And I mean, you're in a situation where you are always touching someone. I mean, you are always shoulder to shoulder. You know, you couldn't ever, I mean, you always were pressing somebody's flesh, you know. I mean, it just, and they had no air conditioning. Their air conditioning went out, driving through the desert, you know, so we'd keep wetting these bandanas and putting them over our face and around our neck. And it was, we drove 30 hours straight, you know, nonstop. And I tell you, it was it really revealed a lot, especially about attitudes. It was really interesting. You know, we'd go into these restaurants, and the first part of the trip, you know, it's pretty easy to keep putting your best foot forward. But you know, after about 48 hours, you know, the real stuff starts coming out. Well, I'd noticed, you know, that Harold had offered to buy some gum or candy for everybody, you know, at the counter, you know, like at the you know, when we were finishing up at the restaurant. I said, well, would anybody like some? And I always say, sure, man, I'd like some, you know. And later, you know, a day or so later, it kind of began to hit me. He said, you know, Brad, have you ever thought about buying some candy or gum for the rest of people? I thought, oh, my gosh. I mean, I've been grateful to take it, but I've never thought about, you know, buying something for somebody else and helping out in that way. And but, you know, there are lots of different things that come out on a vision trip that that God can use to really shape and mold individuals. And these things were created probably with me and Seth and a couple of those other guys that went on the first trip in mind. But these are qualities that will be stretched on the trip. Let me just go over some of these because I tell you, I couldn't have said them any better. On flexibility, that's probably one of the first things that'll be stretched. You'll hear this. But I thought they said that the next that we're going to such and such. I thought we weren't going to spend this much on a meal. This makes the 10th time they've changed plans. George, you ever hear that or sense that? And you know, what we did, I brought the first group of students. I've been ministering in California for about 4 years, and we had our first vision trip. So let me tell you how we did this. We got together, and we had a dinner the week before we were going on the vision trip. And that dinner was to talk about the trip and kind of anticipate what was going to happen and let them in on some things. And then we played this game. I said, okay, now here's what we want to do. I want you to take the first quality, flexibility. And I went over some of these things. And I said, what I want you to do is pick one of these things that you would really struggle with. And so anyway, then I said, okay, now we're going to pretend like, you know, we're on the vision trip and you're struggling and you're going to, you know, you're going to gripe about it. So we got up and we started playing this game and, you know, this makes the 10th time, man, we've had to stop for so-and-so, man. Can't they hold it any longer? You know, this kind of a thing. And why are we going to have to do this and change plans? And so we went through the negative, and then we went through the positive. And so we said, okay, now we want to turn it around, and now I want you to respond in a positive way. You know, what would be the right way? Well, you know, I'm so excited about, you know, trying to teach these kids, you know, some positive things. Well, they turned it around. Everybody started saying, same as three, same as one. But anyway, we start getting the message, you know, in terms of, you know, how is God going to provide for this? And you know, time and time again through the trip, different things would happen. And in a humorous way, these things would come up, you know, about flexibility, about following leadership, about serving others in comparison. And I tell you, God really used that to build into the... I remember we were coming from Fort Worth up to Norman. And these three guys were riding in the same car, and they all happened to be roommates. And they had kind of had an agenda for what they thought ought to be happening during that part of the trip. The problem is, each of them had their own agenda. And so they had a real heart-to-heart talk and of working through, you know, serving and not comparing to one another and being willing to follow leadership and so forth. And God really used that to bring them a lot closer together. One of the things that you can count on is that these kind of things will be stretched when you spend a week together in that kind of intense time. And so by going through this and doing kind of a simulation game, it really helps to get students prepared to thinking about the kind of things that they're going to have to deal with. And these qualities, you know, really are important, especially like in following leadership, like number three. Nobody asked me about this decision, or I'm going to go along with it, but I'm going to make it hard on them. And I tell you, when we're tired and when we've been going on those 12, 14-hour days, I tell you, Satan many times tempts us with those kind of things. So I think one of the greatest benefits of the vision trips is the opportunity to build some character, and to, just like Carol was talking about, they become aware of the need to serve. They become aware of to what degree they really do follow spiritual leadership. They become aware of what it means to be flexible and be able to bend and adjust as things change. Because, you know, that's what life is like. And what we're doing is just preparing them to be effective team members as they go on. Because everybody is going to be a part of somebody's team. Matter of fact, more than one team many times at a time. Through your job, through your church, even in a family situation. So it's very important to talk about and prepare students and help them through the trip and to dialogue with them about these kinds of qualities and so forth. But just a couple of things that I learned in this on this first trip. You see, I'd gone on vision trips before, and there's a tremendous difference between a mission trip and a vision trip. Now, both of them are significant and important and have their place. But a vision trip, I hope you're seeing, is totally different than a mission trip. In the sense of a mission trip, you're going to do something, usually for someone. A vision trip is exposing people to experiences, to people, so that their mentality, so that their ideas, in a way, are kind of blown apart. And they come back with a realizing that there are more categories, that there's a bigger way to see what God is up to, and that they come out of their ethnocentrism and begin to see that God has a bigger way about how he's at work and so forth. But I remember as I talked to these students, you know, I was trying to convince them about something they had no idea what I was talking about. You know, a vision trip? I mean, we're going from California to Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, most people come here on spring break to go to the beaches, you know, to go to Palm Springs. We're going to Texas and Oklahoma? I said, yeah. And what are we going to do? Well, we're going to hear from these different men and women of God that have really influenced my life. And what else are we going to do? Well, we're primarily going to meet people and hear from their lives. And it was difficult initially to instill that vision. And another thing was just a cost. And there were several of us, including myself, that didn't have the money. And I said, you know, if God wants you to do this, then go for it, and he'll provide the money. And one of our students, on his own initiative, I was really pleased, stood up before his church and said, I've never stood before you before to share with you a need, but our BSU is taking 7 students on a vision trip that I really feel like could be life-changing for some of us. And here's what we're going to be doing. And the pastor had already given him permission to do this, and he said, the pastor said, well, it's Annie Armstrong offering time, and so I don't want you to pass a plate, but you can stand in the back of the church, and if people want to give you something, that's fine. So he stood in the back of the church, and people begin to come up and say, man, I'm excited, and slip a check or slip some money in his Bible. And he wasn't looking at it at the time, but one elderly man came up and said, now, what are you, a vision trip, you know? He said, explain that to me again, you know, because he was kind of hard of hearing. And so he did. And he sat down and this guy wrote out a check for $1,000 and stuck in his Bible. Well, this student got home, opened his Bible, and there was $2,100 worth of cash and checks. Can you imagine what that did when we came back and shared that at that dinner? All of our expenses were taken care of. You know what we did with that money? This is really fun. We put it in one envelope, and it was just like a community the whole week. Every time we ate, we went to that one little envelope and got the money out to pay for it. When we stopped for various things or we paid for the motel, you know, everybody, we'd pay out of that one envelope. It was just like, and they had everything in common. And that whole week was just one gift after another from the Lord. I want to tell you, in 4 years, there is no activity that I've done that has had or will have a greater impact on students. I can't oversell the power of what God can do through a vision trip. One of the gals was graduating, and she stayed with Kathy Rust in Fort Worth. And just staying with Kathy Rust and seeing her life and hearing from her so impacted her life that she came back, and she's graduating, but God spoke to her about the need to use her desires and gifts to go into nursing, just like Kathy was doing. So now she's entering the nursing program. Another guy who is graduating was so impacted by Gene Moore's life to see a Christian businessman who has affected so many people's life for Jesus Christ. You see, he somehow thought that in order to make a difference for Christ, he's going to have to go to seminary, have to become a full-time professional minister like so many of us. I wonder why. Well, it's because mainly he'd seen me and my pastor and so forth. And when he saw some of the laymen here, like Gene Warr and Kirk Humphreys and some of the students, some of the singles from Hope Fort Worth, I tell you, it blew that little paradigm completely apart. I can make a difference for Jesus Christ as a businessman, as a layman. And it totally freed Sam up. I mean, he was kind of in bondage about, gosh, if I'm going to make a difference for God, I guess there's only one option. And he came back saying, I'm free. I'm so thrilled. And now he and his fiance are headed to Japan for a year. They've been asked by the government to come over and teach English. And you know what they're going to be doing in addition to that, making disciples. But so I guess that's what I want to share, just a little bit about some personal illustrations recently and these qualities. Preparation is very much a key to the success of these things. But I tell you, if you will expose your students to the men and women who walk by faith, I tell you, 10 minutes with a person who loves God is worth a semester or several years sometimes of hanging around our lives. And that's the truth.
A book I'm reading right now is one you may want to look at sometime. It's called Shaping Character, Moral Education in the Christian Colleges by Arthur Holmes. He's a professor of philosophy and department chair at Wheaton. This is a study done by people at Christian universities, not necessarily denominational universities, but Christian ones like Wheaton, where they've done study on how to impact the character of the students there. Though it's at Christian universities, it's applicable to secular universities. He's got a statement in here, in the part that I've gotten to so far, that goes along with some of the things Harold was saying last night in terms of how we build values in people. He's quoting a Professor Kohlberg and a scale that he has. It's kind of similar to the scale Harold had last night on how values change. I'll read this. I hope it'll make sense. It says, the further question arises of how to nurture growth in their character development. Kohlberg claims that the move to a higher stage from them to grow from one stage in their character to another is aided by cognitive dissonance, a tension that comes from realizing that my present form of thinking cannot resolve an issue. It says that to move in our character development is aided by cognitive dissonance, a tension that comes from realizing that my present form of thinking cannot resolve an issue. What I've got right now won't work in this situation. Yet the Christian college environment, with its often unreflective acceptance of conventional Christian views, and with its behavioral rules, plainly minimizes dissonance and encourages conformity. What he's saying there is, in most of our colleges, even in most of our BSUs, instead of us being placed in cognitive dissonance kind of environments, we're placed in environments where we just conform, basically. And so he's saying we need to get out of that. He wraps up this situation, this chapter, by saying, somehow cognitive dissonance must be creative in the same context in which decisive commitment is encouraged. We put them in a situation where there's cognitive dissonance, and then in the same place we encourage decisive commitment. Issues must be raised which challenge uncritical thinking, so that teaching ethics will involve more than informative lectures about what the Bible says. And then he wraps up by saying, yet case studies, if we use case studies to produce this kind of cognitive dissonance, case studies require teachers whose moral concern and commitments, while not imposed on the student or the discussion, model the kind of outcome that is possible. So as their leader, we need to model what we're trying to produce in their lives. Again, these are thoughts that go along with what Harold was saying last night, but these are thoughts on why you would want to consider taking your students on vision trips. Because they will see things and be exposed to things there that just will shake them and put them in a little more dissonance. You know, they don't feel settled about it than they will on your campus or in your BSU. It's an important thing. The difference, Brad talked some about the difference between mission trips and vision trips. Primarily, I guess we could say the difference is, whereas on mission trips, traditionally what we've done is gone in and done something for people, like build a church building or done puppet ministry or youth ministry, something like that. On vision trips, we're talking more in terms of developing students' vision and really also developing their character. And George talked some about character development on mission trips, or on vision trips. I've led, I think, around 10 or 11 vision trips to Los Angeles, Seattle, Boston, Des Moines, and Houston. And some of those have been with seminary students. Some of them have been with college students. If you look at the handout that I've got, we're going to run through this pretty quick. Yours is this shrimp-colored thing. Mine is white. Whatever color that is, who knows and who cares? But the they're in your packets. Yeah, okay. Look at the one that says developing vision trips for missions. We'll run through this quick. Discern the vision needs of your students. What do they need? You know, if they go, if they need something that's going to especially do with world missions, then Los Angeles, that trip that George put together would be just right down the road, you know. If they need something in terms of urban church planting, you don't have to go all the way to Los Angeles to see something like that. You could come to Fort Worth, you could go to Wichita. There are some places more in the center part of the United States. So try to get a sense of in what ways does their vision need to be stretched. If it's just in terms of seeing masses of people, you could go to Mexico City. You know, try to see what you think your students need. And then number two, set some objectives for the trip. On the second handout on the shrimp-colored paper, we have a set of objectives that we've used for vision trips at Hope for the students to gain an understanding for the type of work needed to reach the area that's visited, what is working in ministry there, what is not working. You need to do this very carefully because students, especially seminary students, are very desirous of being critics, And if all your students do is drive around Los Angeles criticizing all the ministries or all the cults, then they haven't accomplished very much and you haven't accomplished very much. You do want them to see what is working, what is not working, but you want to try to do that in an atmosphere of being a learner and not being a critic. What's working, what's not working, to see the importance of some things like teamwork. And the trips we have taken, we've tried to go places where there's a team of people. Maybe like a pastor and just a few, two or three or four people. But a team that's working in reaching people. To see a ministry that's built to grow. Because some ministries are not built to grow. A ministry that can grow even with limited resources. And in our society, in this generation, they need to see that. Because I don't think that anytime real soon, millions of dollars are going to start pouring in for the things we're trying to pull off. And so they need to get the idea, if I'm sitting back because we don't have money, then that's too small of a thing to sit back for. So you want them to see people that are just charging hell, as some people say, with not much money in their pocket, but who are doing it, who are going after it. Okay, another objective for the students to gain an understanding and heart for masses of people. And to see in that context their life counting for more than just the status quo. Now at this point we're getting into this dissonance producing situation. You drive around the greater Los Angeles area and go up to the Griffith Park Observatory and tell them that they are looking on over 14 million people, is it, in the greater Los Angeles area? And ask them, how do you think we're going to reach those people? You know, and they can't go back thinking, having my quiet time and maybe witnessing twice in my lifetime is going to cut it. It produces dissonance. Sometimes it breaks hearts. I'll tell you about that at the end. And to contrast this mission area with their local area. You know, what's the same kind of things here that are at TCU, like my campus? What are some of the needs or some of the ways to reach people here that are different? Again, not so they can be ministry critics or ministry experts, but so that they can begin to think through ministry strategies. You know, what's similar, what's different? Number three, for the students to gain an understanding of the kind of person it will take to be successful. I could go on about this because there's some things about this one that I feel very deeply. But you need to be very, very, very careful about the people you put in front of your students and make them out to be heroes. You need to put people in front of them and make them out to be heroes who, as Philippians 2 says, have risked their life for the gospel. And when you take students on trips like this, you need to help them to see people who have given their life for years for things. When I was in Los Angeles 2 weeks ago, I was with Randy Lanthrop's church, and I was with some of his businessmen in his church, that most of whom have come to Christ since the church began. And we were eating dinner, and Thad King was there. And so and Thad's brother was there also, and I said, have you guys ever heard of Thad King's father? And they said no. And I said, you know, he is one of the most respected Southern Baptist ministers in Los Angeles. And I said, you know, that man has paid out his life for, I think, 40 years now. And has gone against some things that have cost him dearly. And I just told those businessmen about what David King has sacrificed for the kingdom, because they needed to know about people like him. So on these trips, you want them to see people who are making it over the long haul. You know, sometimes you'll take them and the minister of the church is maybe just in his early 30s and he hadn't quite long hauled it yet. But maybe there's some other pastors out there of traditional churches that maybe are having a hard time, but that man has been faithful in the sphere that he could be faithful in, that he knew to be faithful in. You want him to see that. Number four, for the leader to pace that and point out particular areas of character needed in walking with God. You need to pace set these, and you need to point them out. You know, when Jesus washed the disciples' feet, he washed them. And then he said, do you know what I've done for you? Did you see this? No. And he explains it, his precept and example. You want them to see that. You want to pace set it, and then you want to help them to see it. Not necessarily in your life only, but in other people's lives that are out there. Things like flexibility, faith, initiative, serving and sacrifice, yielding rights, teamwork, heart for right relationships, fellowship, things like that. And then number five, for the students to generally like the place, you know, if they come back thinking, man, I will never go there again, you know, or if they come back thinking, you know, I'm going to stay in my little sheltered world, that thing's just too much, then that's not good. You want them to have a good time. And you want to do what you can to craft it in a way to where they can swallow it, not to where it's just overwhelming. Okay, back to that first page, developing vision trips. You want to, after you've determined your objectives, you've thought about what they need to see, you've thought about the objectives, then you want to determine where you're going to go, what location. Number four, you want to contact whoever is there and discuss the plans and arrangements. And a couple of things about this. You need to communicate long and hard and clearly with this person as to what he's going to do and what you're going to do. So you won't end up at the airport with nobody to pick you up and with no cars to get around in when you get out there. Or you're not going to get out there thinking they're going to feed you three meals a day and they're feeding you nothing or things like that. So you need to take lots of time. And like we said, Hope, don't assume anything. You know, clearly communicate what his responsibility on this thing is, what your responsibility is. And also, don't put the burden on him. The Lord knows that man's got enough to do already than to be a glorified tour guide, you know. So, you know, he's there to serve you, but don't just act like it's a place to get rid of your students for a week so you can go visit your great aunt somewhere and he's taking care of your students. You know, you know, use him as he wants to be used, but you really try to take the burden of the week. Okay, number five, determine the cost of trip per individual. And again, with our budgets, everybody in this group, about everybody we know, we don't have money to lose too much. And you need to spend some hard time on this one, determining how much you're going to charge your students. We have almost every year broken even, but we took a ski trip this year that I'm still bailing out of, that the cost just, we went $700 over budget on it. And we're about back to zero on that one. But so you want to really be careful about determining your cost. Transportation cost, how much is it going to cost to get out there? How much is it going to cost once you get there? Trip insurance, I recommend that. You can get a policy really cheap, but I think that will communicate responsibility, especially to your students' parents, that if something happens, they've got some coverage. And also insurance for the vehicles. You need to think through how that, and don't assume anything about insurance. Always get it from somebody and get their name. Because if you have to make a claim, you're going to want to know you have it. Recreation costs, if you're going to Los Angeles, it costs $27.50 to go to Disneyland. You need to remember that when you're figuring your charges. Food, again, you need to communicate clearly. If that local pastor, if his people are going to feed you breakfast, then make sure that's communicated clearly. If not, you're going to, you know, you need to figure out how much all the food's going to cost. Your food on the road out there and your food once you get there. Lodging, you may get free lodging out there, but if you're driving, you may need to stay in a motel or something. You need to figure that into your cost. Okay, then you want to go ahead and recruit your core people to the trip. And Brad, as Brad said, for the first trip, that'll be an experience. Because, what? You know, but See, Brad's already, I think, got people signed up for the next trip. I mean, they came back with such a buzz that, you know, once you do one that's good, they come back excited about it. And then you and your core students want to recruit other students. Now, George made a good point here about the type of student that on the kind of trips he does to L.A., you want to be a tough kind of student going on that one, because they're exposed to so much. And I mean, talking about dissonance, these people on this trip get some dissonance. You know, from Tom Wolfe to the Buddhist temple, that's a lot of dissonance, you know. And now on some of the other trips we've taken, you wouldn't need to be a senior. You know, we've taken some others that are a little more low-key, a little more just one or two things focused on. You wouldn't necessarily need to be a senior to go on those. So recruiting students. And then after that, like Brad said, you want to have one or two meetings with your students. One of the things I say at these meetings is we're going to have fun, we're going to learn, we're going to serve. But one thing I always say is this will not be a democracy. You know, and I tell them up front, I'm leading this trip. And you need to know up front that I'm leading this trip. I will want your input. If I don't ask you, feel free to give it to me, but I will not necessarily follow it. And I just want them to know up front that it is not a democracy. Okay, number eight, plan out your days. And boy, this is key. I've seen some people do some trips, and they just basically think, well, we'll go out to L.A. and figure it out when we get there. And that's a mess. I mean, that is, there's no other way to say it. You need to plan out each day. And we're talking travel days and the days you're out there. And I mean from when they get up in the morning to when they go to bed at night. Because if you don't, you're going to end up with some big gaps of lag time where you're just sitting there. And you may think up something like, oh, well, why don't we go to this mall and just kind of hang out? And the students are like, right. You know, we paid all this money, took all this time so we could go hang out at a mall in Irvine. You know, you need to plan it. You need to pack it. And if you're taking students, you need to fill those days. Just pack them full. Like that thing George did, that is a good schedule because it's packed. And you can always cut out stuff. But with students, you want to run them. You really want to run them on a trip like this.
One day we didn't plan something purposefully, and they planned it. They went to go see a baseball game. So if you don't plan it, they will want something.
Yeah, and if you're like me, I don't want a bunch of students in L.A. planning something too much. You know, I don't know. Y'all may have more faith than me on that, but I. So you want to plan out each day. And again, like I said, the travel time also. Time with local ministry leaders. Who you're going to get with, you need to set up the appointments way before you get there. Don't get out there and start calling Tom Wolfe trying to get an appointment. You know, that's just not good manners, and it's not very smart. You want to plan your service and ministry projects. If you're going to do some service, we've taken trips out to L.A. where we'll spend the morning meeting with the ministry leader, learning from him, spend the afternoon scraping his house for him to paint or taking care of his kids, things like that. So planning the service parts of the trip. Purposeful sightseeing. You know, George has got that on his thing, Chinatown or wherever you're going to go, plan that. Because in Los Angeles, if you don't plan travel time, you're in a big mess because of traffic. You have to plan around traffic, and you have to know that Chinatown isn't anywhere close to Church in the Valley, you know. And, you know, so plan your sightseeing. Plan your recreation. Plan the times that y'all are going to have to discuss and debrief. Make sure they have daily time with God, because heaven knows they'll need it. And then your meals and transportation. Then the last thing down there, plan how to lead the trip in a manner that will best aid in meeting your objectives for the trip. The role of the leader on vision trips is crucial. You know, I'm a phlegmatic type person, but boy, you cannot be a phlegmatic when you're leading or you cannot just live in your phlegmatism. Let me put it that way. As Judy says, you have to be a phlegmatic with a choleric's lifestyle. And you really do. You really have to constantly be thinking how to buy it up, how to use it. Need to be thinking what to pay set, questions to ask. And if you drive somewhere, man, that time in the car is wonderful to ask questions, to share your life, to listen to tapes, to on the way back to debrief, to begin thinking about application for your campus. Questions to ask. Use of travel time. That moved into that. Now, midweek attitude adjustment. This is one that we learned from Harold. If you leave on Saturday, about Tuesday or Wednesday, you just need to get the crew together and confess sin to each other. You know, and you don't want to push it if there's no sin to confess, and that's great. But usually by that time, there are some rotten attitudes and some broken relationships. And you want to get them together and share the idea about clear relationships again, you know. And just give them some time to get at peace with each other, to make things right. Or if they're, you know, about half of them may be offended at you by that time. And for them to have a time to get at peace with you. You need to figure out how you're going to help students really see things, you know, to where they don't just go to the Muslim temple and say, well, yeah, there was a Muslim temple, you know. But they see something about that thing. They begin to see it. Dissonance-producing situations, and then debriefing, you know, debriefing from the time. To wrap this up, we had a seminary student come to Hope a number of years ago, and a real servant kind of fella, kind of a good heart, but very little idea of where he was heading in life. The two things that he knew that he liked back then was disco dancing. You can tell how old this has been. And counseling. He wanted to be some kind of religious counselor. He wasn't sure exactly what that was, but he wanted to be a religious counselor that had time to disco dance. And so he got involved at Hope. And again, he was a servant. And there were a lot of things that happened in his life, not just a vision trip, but a lot of things that happened in this guy's life. He went on a vision trip that I led to Los Angeles, and it was a really good experience for him. And then a year or two later, he went on a vision trip that I led to Seattle. And last night we were there, we went up in the Space Needle from one of the old world's fairs where you can overlook the whole Seattle Tacoma area. And by that time, he knew some demographics. He knew how many millions of people were there. And he knew that between 60 and 75% of the people in the Seattle Tacoma area are absolutely religiously disenfranchised. They don't go to anything. And as he's up there in the Space Needle looking over the city, he just starts sobbing. Just bawling. And over the need of that city. And I think over some things in his own life. And, you know, he came back and he more than ever, he started getting after it. And, you know, now he's the minister of evangelism at Hope Church in Fort Worth. And his life's different. Now, to say that that one vision trip did it, that would be a farce. It didn't. But it was a key thing that turned that man's life around from just disco dancing and religious counseling to being someone who's changing his sphere of the world for the Lord Jesus Christ. Are there any questions?
Let me just say something for your questions. That first vision trip that I took out to California, God would use some... probably 10 years later, when I hit a point in my life of, I'd been a pastor in Nashville, Tennessee, and I was praying, God, where do you want me to go and serve and lay down my life? And that vision trip to California was something that God would later use to bring me back to California to begin to minister. You just never know the just like John was sharing. And in my case, I can tell you without question that if it hadn't been for that vision trip, I know that I wouldn't be in California today. And that's how God used that to open my eyes to the need out there. And we finally got out there and we're we're loving it, and God's using us.
Any questions? Judy?
Yes, we do. As a matter of fact, we've encouraged others to go along with us. And when I was BSU director in Montana, I brought one student with me from Montana and hooked up with the OU group. I think Dave was even on that trip, and Linda was too. And I just brought one student with me, but that student's life was changed from that. So I think it's great to be able to team up. And as a matter of fact, if you notice through the notes there that there was actually two groups that went to L.A. this time, the one from Tulsa with Rob McNamara, and he goes every year. So the last 2 years we've gone together to L.A. So for ours, personally, I'd say yes. The only thing I'd say is that you know the students that you do ask if you go on this particular trip. And I'm glad that John clarified that there's other trips that aren't as quite as hectic, I guess I should say, as the LA one, but for that particular one, I would encourage you to really know your student.
I'm just curious if you've found any staff student ratios that when you reach a certain point you're asking for trouble as far as too many.
The question is there a ratio that we recommend in terms of how many staff to go, in terms of how many students to go, before it gets chaotic? Do any of y'all have any thoughts on that?
I can speak to that. For our one staff per van load, which is probably about six or seven. 2 years ago, we had three staff members and four vans, and that fourth van that had a student driving, the students that rode in that van, the driving in L.A. is different than driving in Oklahoma City. And so the students that rode in that van were almost scared to ride in that. Not that directors are that much better drivers than students, but I think that kind of ratio, maybe 1-7, particularly for vans, but that's the only reason that I would say that. Maybe they could speak to it differently.
I guess that's right. I think the driving time is so important that if you can have one person in each vehicle, it maximizes the deal.
Have you noticed a qualitative difference between trying to live together communally, say, a church basement or whatever, as opposed to scattering the participants out and giving the church members home, as far as
okay. The question is the effect it has when you go on one of these trips between farming the students out to people's homes in the area or living all together, say like in a church gymnasium or something. A couple of thoughts I have on that is in some of these places there wouldn't be a facility where we could all fit because a lot of the churches we visit don't have buildings or facilities, so there wouldn't really be an opportunity. The reason that we have, I believe on all these trips, farmed people out into the people's homes is because we want them to get a sense of people and living with the people and getting a chance to ask these people questions about their participation in the ministry. And like Brad shared, as they brought that group to Fort Worth this year, one of the most impactful things was their student living that time with one of our members who was in a nursing profession, how challenging that was to her life. So I think, you know, usually more like on retreats and stuff, you can have more of the communal living and being together. You definitely get that in the cars on the way out there on these trips, but we have gone more towards the other for those reasons. Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
About how you help your students as far as debriefing or
Yeah, the question has to do with how to help the students debrief and deal with all they've been exposed to in a way to where they don't start unloading on a bedway in the people back home. I think that if you drive back instead of fly back, you have a lot of time to slowly begin to turn that around. You don't want to dismiss what they've been exposed to, or even to dismiss some of the things they've seen that are maybe kind of questionable in their local area. But what you want to begin doing is asking questions like, how can we deal with this in a spirit of humility when we get back to where our lives have been changed, and we want to help other people to see things like that, but to where we don't push on them something that they're not ready for yet, or where they haven't been exposed to it yet. So again, I think so much of that is up to the leader, especially if you drive back, slowly talking through that process. If you fly back, then maybe having a day at the end of the week while you're still in Los Angeles, or at least half a day, to do a lot of that debriefing, and then maybe have, sometimes on these trips, say like a week after we get back to town, everybody has their pictures developed by then, and we get together and show pictures and do a little more debriefing. But that is so important. I think that sometimes these trips with immature students, it can be a destructive thing when they get back if their leader doesn't take responsibility in guiding them through that.
Let me speak to that from the opposite standpoint. I feel like that one vision trip we took, we did it wrong. We did not debrief correctly, and let me tell you what we did, and you can avoid that. Is we had come up to the time, and there's a couple other things we wanted to do, so we thought that maybe we could smash those in. And it really kind of bled over into the debriefing time. I think if you're going to fly, you need to protect that debriefing time. We did not protect it. And furthermore, in debriefing, do it with questions, not with another lecture. We did that one time with a lecture, and I think that was incorrect to do that. I think that if you're going to make statements, this might sound funny, but if you're going to make statements, make them with questions. So guide the discussion and debriefing time with questions. We did not do that, and I think that was a mistake to do it that way. The students had all this input, and we just gave them more input. And so that's some input on how not to do it.
Let me tell you another example like that. We had a BSU group that came to Fort Worth for a vision trip. And we just had an excellent time with this group. I feel like we were just really able to help them. Felt like the Lord just kind of was there putting it together for us. And we are in the meeting room. I had wrapped up my time with them, and their ministry leader stood up and said this. He said, "I want you to know the reason we brought you to Hope Baptist Church is so that you would be sick of the traditional church and never be a part of one again." And I, you know, I didn't know what to do. I just, because it was his ministry and he was leading it. And I for the sake of the tape, I won't go on with all that I was. But And you know, he really put his students in a bind. I mean a bad bind. Because there was one girl who had already decided her calling in life was to be a part of a traditional church. So as much as you want students to see things on these trips, you cannot put them in a bind, because that's not where the Holy Spirit resides in things like that. You just don't want to do that. So,
let me say one other thing with that. This is indirectly related to debriefing, but one thing that I try to do is think through ahead of time our entire schedule and print up evaluations so that I can hand them to them at the end. And I ask our students to put their names on the evaluations so I can, in a way, use that as a debriefing, because sometimes they'll say something in writing to me that they may not say in a formal group. And then I can go back individually to that student and say, you know, I see that you wrote this on there. Can we talk about that?
Any other questions? Our time's just about up. Well, thank you,
Fred.
I was just going to say, one of the things that is most exciting to me about these trips, and I think you can imagine this, is that after you've experienced this together, boy, it binds you together with a group of people like just about no other experience that I know of. And I mean, for years, I mean, I'm still, you know, when I get together with some guys after that are out in ministry and stuff, we'll still talk about you know, a vision trip that we took up to Chicago and the hilarious things that happened and the goofball things that we did and so forth. And it's just a real, I mean, if you really want something that, and I think there's always some risk, and that's why the details and the plannings and the debriefing, of course you always get that in everything, but the potential binding together with people in your lives is so incredible. And I remember something Dave said out on our vision trip, you know, this is so funny. He said, you know, when we go on a family vacation, I kind of like to, you know, I kind of hope a crisis happens, or, you know, we like to kind of plan a crisis or something like that. And, because it really binds you together. I thought, well, you know, you haven't been on one of our family vacations. We don't have to, I never have to plan one, buddy. But you know, that's true. Even when the plans, you know, go a little haywire, you get a flat tire, some of these unexpected things, or a finance. Again, God is at work through those things to really teach you and draw you together. And many times, it's the things that, to some degree, are unexpected that will be the things you reflect on and talk about and muse over. And so we just really hope you have caught a little bit of a vision. Of course, the only way you really know it is to do it. And then, you know, you've gotten some practical tools so that you can go ahead and take one.